So for those of you that don't know, my name is Tim Samuels. I am a ruling elder here at church. I am not a pastor. I am not trained in any of these comical things other than what Stephen has taught me along the way and the few things that I've picked up. So I was asked earlier, because there's a group that comes in and prays every morning, and somebody said, "Your name came up in prayer. Are you okay?" I'm like, "No, I think they were just praying that I'd do okay this morning." So, I don't know why, but the story about the fisherman stuck in my mind. It's been stuck in there for ever since I was coming up with this, and I think it was just a good tie-in. Last week, when Dick Natrop was up here, he preached and he talked about keeping things in context and knowing the context. Now, I think it's important that we remember two things about the words in the Bible. We know that it is God's written word. There's no question about that. But it has two purposes, and it's important to remember that it's two separate ones. One of them is inspiration, okay? You should be inspired by the things that you read. It's kind of interesting that our Westminster Confession of Faith question today ties into the Spirit, and inspiration from the Bible is energizing of the Spirit inside of you. It's the way God has it set up. But there's also the purpose of the Word that is, call it provision, call it growth, call it any number of different things. But the visual of it is it's like a funnel, okay? When you first hear the word, when you first come to Christ and that acceptance, the funnel is really wide at the top. And as you continue to read and study the word, the funnel gets narrower and narrower to help you understand the purpose that God has behind those words. Does that make sense? That's part of what Dick was talking about. Well, we're going to go through something very similar than that. We're going to go into one of the, probably, I'm going to say the top two best known stories in the Bible. Noah's Ark and the story of David and Goliath are probably the two stories that kids learn soonest. They're the two stories that the most non-schooled in Christianity have heard of. And we're going to look at them a little bit from that perspective that Dick started last week. And I'm going to warn you right now, because that pastor of ours, he's got a plan. It was very interesting because when he asked me to take this Sunday, which was right after he talked to Dick about preaching last Sunday, I was milling around trying to find a passage, and I really couldn't find anything, and I had some suggestions, and he said, "Oh, can I make a suggestion?" And the passage I'm about to read was his suggestion. And it's very interesting how everything for these last 2 weeks tie in, and I'm just going to warn you, I don't know this for sure, but I have a feeling that there's other messages coming up that are going to tie back into the way he deviously got me to preach to you about this today. So, but if you want to join me, we're going to 1 Samuel verse 17. If you have a Bible to follow along, there's Bibles underneath the pews and the chairs. They're the red ones, not the blue ones. If you're looking in the blue ones, those are hymns. I don't have the attention span for you to burst out in song right now, so stick with the red one. So, 1 Samuel 17, starting at verse 17. And Jesse said to David his son, "Take for your brothers an ephod of this parched grain and these 10 loaves and carry them quickly to the camp to your brothers. Also take these 10 cheeses to the commander of the 1,000. See if your brothers are well and bring some token from them. Now Saul and they and all of the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. And David rose early in the morning and left the sheep with the keeper and took the provisions and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the encampment with the host as the host was going out to the battle line, shouting the war cry. And Israel and the Philistines drew up for battle, army against army. And David left the things in charge of the keeper of the baggage and ran to the ranks and went and greeted his brothers. As he talked to them, behold, the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, came up out of the ranks of the Philistines and spoke the same words as before. And David heard him. All of the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were much afraid. And the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. And the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel." And David said to the men who stood by him, "What shall be done for the man who kills the Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For whom is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And the people answered him in the same way, "So shall it be done to the man who kills him." Now Eliab, the eldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, "Why have you come down, and with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your presumption and the evil of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle." And David said, "What have I done now? Was it not but a word?" And he turned away from him towards another and spoke in the same way, and the people answered him again as before. When the words that David spoke were heard, they repeated them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "You are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, and he has been a man of war from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep sheep for his father. And when there came a lion or a bear and took one of the flock, I went after him and struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. And if he arose against me, I caught him by the beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God." And David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." Then Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put a helmet of bronze on his head and clothed him with a coat of mail. And David strapped his sword over the armor, and he tried in vain to go, for he had not tested them. Then David said to Saul, "I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them." So David put them off. Then he took his staff in his hand and chose five smooth stones from the brook and put them in his shepherd's pouch. His sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. And the Philistine moved forward and came near David with his shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. And the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me, with a sword and with your spear and with a javelin. But I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, who you have defiled. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the hosts of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. When the Philistine arose and came and drew near to David, David ran quickly towards the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone and slung it and struck the Philistine in the forehead. The stone sank into the forehead, and he fell on his face to the ground. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and struck the Philistine and killed him. There was no sword in David's hand. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel and Judah rose with a shout and pursued the Philistine as far as Gath and the gates of Ekron, so that the wounded Philistines fell on the way from Sherem as far as Gath and Ekron. And the people of Israel came back from chasing the Philistines, and they plundered their camp. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put the armor in his tent. So here's a question to think about. When we read that story, who do we think we are in the story? All of my life I was taught that I was David, faith in Goliath, that God would be with me in all of those big challenges and all of those things to go out. There's songs written about facing our giants. There's talks given about facing our giants and things like that. So from my perspective, I always looked at myself as David. But let's kind of break things down a little bit and see where we come out in the end. Because if you remember, last summer we did Summer in the Psalms, and there was lots and lots of references to David, psalms and songs wrote by David, inspirational, uplifting examples. David is held up as an example of both the good and the bad of mankind, of the forgiveness of God, and all of those things. But in this case, let's take a look at who David really is in this story. So let's take a look at David and his brother. Okay? So when we start off in this, doesn't David almost sound offended when he comes up to the battle line? Verse 26, and David said to the men who stood by him, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" Okay, so notice, he's not just saying he's insulting us. What's he really saying? He's insulting God. And he basically says, why are we standing here? But what does Elab do? Isn't it interesting? His oldest brother says, verse 28, now Elab, the oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Elab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, "Why have you come down, and with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your presumption and the evil of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle." Let's look back one chapter into chapter 16. And you may remember this scene, but Saul has lost favor with God. Samuel the prophet is actually in the beginning of chapter 16. God says to Samuel, how long are you going to keep moping about the fact that I have let go of Saul? And he tells Samuel to go to Jesse's house and to have Jesse's sons pass before him, and that he will tell Samuel which one to anoint. Okay? All goes as planned. Six sons walk past. Every single one of them is, God says, nope, not that one. Nope, not that one. Samuel says, God, surely this one has to be it. Nope, not that one. All six are gone. Still hasn't come up with the one. And Samuel says to Jesse, do you have any more? Well, there's one more. He's the youngest runty one. He's out in the field with the sheep. Why would you want him is what's inferred. Call him in. So he comes in, and sure enough, he's the one that's anointed. Now, it doesn't specifically say in chapter 16, if Samuel came right out and said, hey, boys, this guy, God's new chosen king. It doesn't say that. But it clearly says that he was anointed in front of his father and brothers. So they know there's something special going on, that God has picked this youngest boy. But yet, what's the reaction of the oldest brother? Anger. I know the evil of your heart. Not necessarily the reaction that you might expect. But the fun part is, what does David do? His whole reaction. David says, what have I done now? Was it not but a word? And then he turned away from him and talked to another. It's not that he doesn't respond, but his reaction is, what did I do? And he just turns away, lets it go. So then what happens? Well, word gets to Saul. Now, yep, you can look back in earlier parts of Samuel, and Saul knows who David is, David knows who Saul is. There's a connection through all of this. Saul calls David in. And what's the first thing that David does? David says to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Him being Goliath. Your servant will go and fight this Philistine. But what's Saul's reaction? You can't do that. You're a youth. You are untrained in battle at all. And this Philistine has spent his whole life being trained to fight in battle. If you put the scene into perspective, this was not an uncommon thing. Two armies would meet, and they would say, all right, we've got two choices here. We can fight together. One of us will win. One of us will lose. A bunch of people will die along the way. Or you bring your best fighter. We'll bring our best fighter. And whoever wins that fight is the winner. Much less killing and death. But if you lose, you are slaves and all of your property belongs to the other side. So this was not an uncommon practice. Why do you think nobody wanted to fight him? It's also a little sidebar that's kind of funny. Remember back when the Israelites came through the wilderness and God brought them to the promised land the first time, and they sent the 12 spies in, and the spies came back and they said, the land is filled with giants. We are like, I think it says, we are like crickets. Nope, not crickets. Grasshoppers to them. It's very, very likely that those giants, that Goliath is one of the descendants of those giants that the Israelites never faced, that they spent 40 years in the wilderness, that this whole situation could have been prevented if the Israelites would have believed the first time. But that's one of the sidebars I told Katie I wasn't allowed to get into too much. So, but Saul has the same reaction. His initial reaction is that he doubts. How can you do this? How could this ever be? And David says, "Your servant used to keep sheep for his father. And when the lion came and the bear came to the flock," and he goes through all of that again. And he says, "The Lord who delivered me from the paws of the lion and the bear will deliver me from the hands of the Philistine." Saul's reaction: "Go and let the Lord be with you." But what does he do right after that? I mean, as soon as he says that, "Go and let the Lord be with you, but here, take my shield, take my sword, let's put my armor on you, let's get you all set up with battle. I have the best armor and the best weapons. Go and let God be with you, but let me help you along the way." David tries, but then what does he say? "I can't do this. I've not tested any of these. If you remember back to where he said, I have fought the lion and I have fought the bear and I have won over all of them and God provided, he didn't fight them with any of those things. Do you understand? And I think David realizes this at this point, where he takes it all off and he just takes his staff and his sling and he picks up 5 stones, puts them in his pouch, because his entire life, as he's saying in here, "As God provided for me as a shepherd, he provided for me with these simple tools." David already had everything in his life he needed. He didn't need anything from Saul to be able to fight, to be able to win. He already had it all. So now let's take a look at David and Goliath. Now we're getting into the story everybody knows, right? Goliath says, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his God. I find that very curious, don't you? Because the Philistines, they were multi-gods. And David's saying, "You've defiled my God, the God. Well, I'm going to curse you using all my other gods." Probably not the smartest thing Goliath could do. But what does Goliath have on his side? Everything worldly, right? I mean, he's got so much armor and stuff, he's got an extra guy to carry his shield. It's too cumbersome if I have to carry it all myself. And if you go through the earlier parts, they talk about how big and how heavy and the size of all the things and all of that stuff. From a worldly perspective, Goliath is undefeatable. But David's reply to it is, "You come to me with sword and with spear and with a javelin, and I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, who you have defiled. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and cut off your head, and I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air, to the wild beasts of the earth, and all the earth will know that there is a God in Israel, and that all the assembly may know that the Lord saves, not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand." Everybody knows how it happens from there. The sling, the stone, the falling down, cuts off the head, uses Goliath's own sword to cut off his head. And then what happens after that? Do you notice the reaction of the army of Israel? There's a great cry. The Philistines flee. If you think back to what we talked about before, of course they flee, because they know that they have now become slaves to Israel. Battle's over, we're all slaves, they get everything. Maybe I can go hide in the world. They flee. Israel sets out a cheer, chases after them, the whole body strewn all the way from this city to that city. Then they come back, they plunder, they get all the spoils. Very important detail at the end. David takes the head of Goliath back to Jerusalem, but he takes all of Goliath's weapons and armor and puts them in his tent. Later on, we find out that actually all of that ended up in the tabernacle. All of Goliath's armor, sword, and all of those things David gives to the Lord. Those spoils, that battle was won by the Lord, and David gives those spoils to the Lord. And there's a whole interesting little sidebar when David's on the run from Saul and he needs a sword, and lo and behold, he's at the tabernacle with the priest, and the priest says, "Hey, I got Goliath's sword right here. You need a sword? Why don't you take this sword?" But that's a whole different story. So let's go back to the question that I asked in the beginning. Who are we in the story? See, in the story of David and Goliath, David is Jesus. David is the most humble, most unassuming, least likely to win the battle. David is the one that brings no weapons, just his own tools given to him by God. And he relies on God the whole time. And he has an undisputed victory and saves all of Israel with just a sling and one smooth stone. So I'm definitely not David in the story. But I have to ask myself, am I Elab in the story? There's been times where I've been mad at God. I'd say mostly because I didn't understand. But then again, I have to accept the fact that I'm never going to understand God's business. I don't have the faculties to do it. But maybe I'm Elab. Or am I Saul? Am I the one that says, "Jesus, you got this. Go ahead and do it. But let me help you. You can do it, but you need something from me to do it." Well, I'm sure there's times that's me. But I know for sure I am one of the soldiers in the army of Israel. Because I know for sure that once I realized that the battle was won, that I am all about the victory cry and the pursuing and the plundering and the rewards. And I think all of us fall into one of those categories somewhere along the line. And that's the point of this. It's okay to fall into one of those categories. Because no matter which of those three people, do you understand, David won the battle for Israel. He didn't win it for just some of them. He didn't win it for the ones that deserved or didn't deserve. There was no stipulation. And that's what Jesus did. That's what Jesus did on the cross. And do you understand that literally Jesus' resurrection is like that small, smooth stone that sunk deep into Goliath's head? Very simple, very unassuming. There was no weapons, there was no sword, there was no mighty army fighting. But that simple stone defeated anything and everything and any hope that Satan has. So right now we're in the midst of the pursuit of the army. It's not all done yet. We're still in the middle of the battle cry. We're still in the middle of the plunder. We're still in the middle. There's still danger. There's still all those things. But that's where we are right now. That's the point of history that we're in, and that's the point where we are in this story. I really liked the NIV version rather than the ESV version. Let's see if I can find it in here, because I know it's in here. The NIV in verse 46 says, "The whole world will know that there is a God in Israel." That's kind of the point of what are you tied to from the beginning. The whole world will know. And we're just participants in the army. So, from the moment that I knew I was going to preach, especially on this verse, there were two things that stuck in my head. One of them I mentioned already, and that was the story of the two fishermen. And I don't know why that's been stuck in my head for about 2 months now, just as far as I'm sure that it's God's way of trying to keep me focused on something. But there's a second one that's been stuck in my head, and it's something that in all the time I've been here at Highview, I think we've only done it a couple of times. We talk all the time about salvation, and we talk all the time about if you don't know where your salvation comes from, about praying for it, and we have people that are up here to help you pray and everything else. But I want to end this a little bit different, and I'm not going to do an altar call. I'm not going to make you raise your hands. It's not part of that, but Will, if you could put that prayer up on the screen for me. As I was sitting there last night at about 11 o'clock, I'm like, I want to end this, and we're all going to say a prayer of salvation together, okay? And I want you to say it in one of a couple of ways, okay? I am going to read it off for all of you, for anybody who's hearing, for anybody who's seeing, for anybody. There is somebody that needs to hear these words today, and I'm going to pray them for you. And what I want you guys to do is I want you, if this is, I need just a good reminder of the foundation of my faith, then pray this for yourself. If this is, I have somebody on my heart that needs this prayer, then pray it for them. And if you've never prayed this prayer before, I want you to pray it for you. And then spend the rest of your life figuring out what it means. You're not supposed to understand it up front. You're supposed to understand it better as time goes on. So, if you could, join me in this prayer. God, I confess that I am a sinner and I am in need of salvation. I believe Jesus died on the cross for my sin and rose again to bring me new life. I ask to receive your forgiveness and grace and choose to follow you as my Lord and Savior. Amen.